You are listening to WWBC Coco, Merritt Island, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI Coco, Rockledge, 94.7 FM, W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Pompeii, Indy Atlantic, Indian Harbor Beach, Satellite Beach, 100.7 FM, and W260CL, Coco, 99.9 FM.
Hello, space and treasure coast. This is Sita Biggie on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, right here on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, FM 99.9, and FM 100.7. We're also heard on the World Wide Web. Ellen, every Monday.
Every Monday, right here on AM 1510 WWBC, on FM 94.7, 99.9, and 100.7. And then you can also get all of our broadcasts that are archived on our SetaMediaInc.com.
Thank you. And for our listeners who are just tuning in today, if you don't know it, of course, most people know it. Ellen and I have been on air for 10 years, and we heat up the airwaves. We talk about kitchen table topics, news around that are talked about around the nation and in our community. Our show is fun. It's very informative, quite educational, and we really give out some really valuable information every Monday right here, Miss Ellen.
We do, absolutely. And well, it's a lot of fun, educational and fun, because we do have some really, really robust conversations.
Well, you know what's good about community radio and having a voice? We do know that freedom of speech comes with a responsibility. And I, for one, I take it very seriously. I think you should say what's in your heart, but you have to know how to say it, when to say it, and to whom to say it. And of course, we would like to offer our condolences to the notorious RBG, yes, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, yes, who inspired so many people, myself included, mm-hmm, and proved to us that if you believe in yourself, anything is possible. And one of the things I learned about her was that she believed in human rights for everyone. And she also gave women a voice in that we could stand up straight and say, this is who I am and this is where I'm going. Because she was one of those women that even though so many people were against her, even when she went to school in Harvard, mm-hmm, we saw, you know, the kind of struggles and tribulations she had to go through. I watched a movie and I really fell in love with her and her husband, Marty, and her life. And so I just want to say, wherever she is, that beautiful human soul, rest in peace. And I know Judge Koons is here, Ellen, and we're going to go to him in a minute. And our second half of the show, Basma Alawi is going to be calling in.
Very good.
Yeah.
I was having a tough time with her names.
But before we go to the judge, again, condolences to over 200,000 people have lost their lives to COVID-19. We are socially distanced in our studio. We're still encouraging people to wear their mask, wash your hands. And if you're in a crowded room, for God's sake, wear your mask. Because you're not sure who's asymptomatic, mm-hmm, who might have the disease, and then you'll take it home, the virus, and give it to your loved ones.
Absolutely.
You know?
So today's segment with retired Judge Koons, and we'll talk more about that, is with Cooper Chiropractic. They're Acupuncture, Addiction, and Injury Treatment Center. They're located in Palm Bay, and their phone number is 321-726-8116. So thanks to the great people at Cooper Chiropractic for letting Stephen Koons come on and join us today.
Yeah, and Mr. Koons, you're here. You were with us when we had the other show like years ago when you were running for judge. I remember.
Yeah.
And your bio is extensive. First, to begin with, I'd like to tell our friends on Viewpoint with Stephen and Friends, Mr. Koons, Judge Koons, is also an ex-neighbor of mine. We lived on the same street for years.
Excellent.
He's a very, very nice man, very decent, and we have good conversations. And he's a former state attorney, former assistant attorney general, Satellite High School graduate. I didn't know that.
Yes.
Now you're giving away your age.
Yeah.
Florida State University College of Law, board certified civil trial attorney, Brevard County pro bono attorney for the year in 2007.
Right.
Service awards for Brevard County Legal Aid 2006 to 2010. Brevard County Legal Aid Director, Brevard Bar Foundation Director, past president of the Brevard Bar Foundation, and so much more. And you also, you're an author as well.
Yes.
He wrote a book called Judgment at the 20 Mile Bend.
Right.
A Palm Beach crime story. I'll have to read that. So welcome to the show. I'm so delighted you were able to make it and join Ellen and I.
Well, thank you for having me, Sita. I appreciate it very much.
Well, let's start this unscripted conversation.
Yes.
It's going to be very, you know, I like conversations where people can meet halfway, mm-hmm. right? It's called the brilliance of the minds, I think. And we're not born with it. We're cultivated over time, I think, based on the environment, people we meet along the way, education, life experience, whatever it is, it changes us, correct?
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
So
you're made up of your life experiences.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about what you do. Bring us up to speed. You were on the bench.
Right.
You're now retired. And you told us it's because of age. You don't look that old.
Well, I hit it just exactly right or wrong, depending on your point of view. But when I was required to actually qualify, if I wanted to be a judge for another term, I was already 70 years old. And under Florida law that existed at that time, I was not qualified to actually apply for that position. Now, as it turns out, there was a constitutional amendment that was on the ballot that was extended to age 75, and then that happened. I didn't think that was going to happen, but that happened. But I was unable to qualify because I wasn't legally qualified under the existing Florida law. So as it turns out, at age 70, I was out the door.
Right. So what are you doing now?
Well, I am a Supreme Court circuit civil mediator, and I really enjoy mediating cases. I've been doing a lot of that. And I pride myself in being able to settle just about anything. If you have a case, if you give me enough time, I can settle it. Okay? Because I know what's going to happen. I can tell immediately what's going to happen. And I'm pretty good. I'm pretty good with just regular citizens rather than lawyers, because lawyers, you know, they take positions and they have to show off. They have to show off to their clients.
They have to be the attorney.
Yeah, they have to show how rough and tough they are and how they're going to win and the other side's going to lose. Oh yeah, by the way, but all lawyers have to understand that they could lose a case. They definitely could lose a case.
Right.
If you haven't lost a case, you haven't tried a case. Okay. You know, I've tried a whole bunch of them. Hundreds of cases. But so I mediate, and I still practice a little law. I on a very selective basis. I'm at 5575 U.S. Highway 1, and I'm of counsel to a local firm, a great group of lawyers that I have a lot of fun with, and that is Greg Crutchfield, Corey Piles, and you might remember John Murphy, former Judge John Murphy's in there too.
Well, it's nice that you're able to find a place after being on the bench.
Yeah.
Because we've had so many shows where people who are retired from professions and who are physicians, teachers, other professionals, they really have a difficult time being retired. So it's good, you know, having something to do.
Yeah. Yeah. I cannot just sit back and do nothing. I can't do it. It's just not in me. I have to be busy. I mean, I got up and went to work for 45 years of my life. I got up, took a shower, put on a coat and tie, and went to work for 45 years. I can't stop doing that.
Yeah, you love having a purpose in life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, anyways, but I pace myself. I'm not full-time, you know.
So, do you find, like, your life experience comes into these cases when you mediate?
Oh, yeah. I've seen every case I mediate, I've seen before.
Right.
I've seen this case before. And what I like to do is I like to talk to the actual litigants themselves and say, listen, have you considered this? Have you considered that?
Because age brings reason, right?
Oh, yes.
My mother used to say age brings wisdom and reason. And so, Judge Koons, right now, a country, you know, we live in the greatest country in the world. I really do. I mean, I was blessed as an immigrant to immigrate and come to the United States, and I love giving back from my heart. But I'm noticing right now our country is so divided by hate, by fear, by whatever it is. What do you think we should do right now as a nation to find a bridge to heal that divide?
Well, that's a great question. You know, because I agree with you. It's gotten to the point of being really absurd. I mean, people who are friends are not talking to each other anymore. There's even family members that don't talk to each other anymore. I mean, it's silly what's going on. tragic is a better word, not silly, tragic. What can we do about it? Well, we need to keep that free flow of ideas going, and we need to be able to follow the lead of, you know, Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Ruth Bader Ginsburg, she would have a point of view that was completely diametrically opposed to some of the other members that were on the Supreme Court, but they all respected each other. They all respected their ability to be able to talk to each other, to exchange views, talk to things about, you know, that bother them on the merits, and leave the hate out of it. Because, you know, frankly, I agree with you, this is the best country on the planet. We take everybody. There's not anybody on this planet who is not an American. From every country on the planet, they are Americans from every country.
Right.
They're naturalized Americans. They're born here sometimes. Their parents came here. They're born here. But we have a country made up of just a mosaic of all sorts of people.
Yeah, we are a country of immigrants. We really are.
But we definitely are, yes. And we legally immigrate 1 million people a year, legally. You know, and that's a lot of folks. We already have 330 million, and we just keep going.
Right. So, you know, like, we all watch, you know, on the left, there's extreme left, people on the extreme left, and people on the extreme right. And the people who are reasonable in the middle, who can actually have a conversation with someone and say, well, wait a minute, let's think about this. We are being drowned out. So how can we repair that damage that people have done to us?
Well, there's a lot of folks who are in the middle right now who are being very quiet. You know, it is the silent majority. Who are they? And what are they really thinking? Well, you know, we're going to find out on November the 3rd. We're going to find out who these people are. Because, you know, there are people who won't put, you know, a certain political sign in their front yard, because they're afraid of what might happen to...
But they've got their ideas, they've got their issues
right.
that they're thinking about.
Can you imagine not being afraid to put a political sign in your front yard? Can you imagine that? That's absurd. That's ridiculous. But that's what's going on right now. And, you know, we need to get past that. There are people who do not want to fly an American flag, you know, in front of their house, because people will know immediately, you know, well, must be a Republican, you know.
Yeah, you get labeled.
Yes, you get labeled.
You get labeled, and that's so wrong. Because, you know, like, I was having a conversation with someone, and they said, well, you know, what do you think about the kids in the cages? And I said, well, listen, you know, you have to look at immigration and why people flee their countries.
Mm-hmm.
Bad governments, foreign policy, climate change, reproductive rights, whatever it is. Something happened in that country for those people to flee. They don't have jobs. They want the security of the United States. And mm-hmm. then they said, well, what do you think about asylum? Well, you apply for asylum. And if you don't get through, then yes, you should go back to your country.
Mm-hmm.
And the person said, no, we have to keep them until they can apply again. But here's the thing, who's footing the bill for all this?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, when you get to a reasonable conversation, you could say, okay, let's talk about it. What's happened so that people are not talking about these things?
Well, you know, that doesn't sound like an unreasonable position to me. I mean, so you apply and you are rejected. I think that they ought to be able to stay, and I think they ought to, for a period of time. And of course, when they're here, they ought to be given some sort of provisional status. And while they're here, you know, they're going to be working. And oh, by the way, if they're working, they're paying taxes. They're paying taxes. There's taxes being withheld from their pay. You know, so at least that is going to the federal government. So, you know, I don't have a problem with that. I think, you know, if you don't make it the first time, try again.
Yeah.
You know, but as long as you're being legal. Now, if you're a criminal, you know, if you're committing crimes, you're out of here. Okay? You're just we just don't need that. We got enough crime already.
Right.
We have to get those people out of here.
Because, you know, they said it's the cost to keep a child in one of those detention centers is almost $700 a day. So if you figure a family of four comes in and they don't make the asylum process, they're rejected, they keep trying and they're rejected, I think they want to take certain people who have skills and things like that.
Right.
If you take $700 a day times a month and you just say to the families, here, take this, go home and start a life wherever you came from, people mm-hmm. would actually take you up on that. Because I know in Trinidad and Tobago, $700 US can go a long way times a month.
Oh, yeah.
You know, people could open a business with that and start a life.
Right.
But in some countries, you can't do that because of the gangs and the violence and,
right.
you know, different laws and things. Mm-hmm. So I guess you have to look at everything.
Correct.
You know, because people just run their mouth and say, oh, the kids are in cages. Oh, Trump doesn't want them in. Well, guess what? There's a reason why people flee. And I think we have to look at those reasons before we start having conversations too, you know?
Okay.
So anyway, you're here and we're all talking about women's rights because Ruth Bader Ginsburg passed away. When you're a man and you're a judge and you're an attorney, what is your stance on women's rights?
Oh, absolutely. What's my stance on women's rights?
On their rights.
A big question.
Their rights and their health care.
Oh, I absolutely think that women are entitled to health care. Women are, you know, they have 100% of every right that every male in this country has, as far as I'm concerned. You know, there's no difference. There's no difference.
So what is it people are so scared of right now? Because you were hearing that so many people are talking about the replacement of RBG, and they are scared to death. What do you think is the fear that, I mean, I heard somebody this morning said, I'm shaking. I'm really scared for my healthcare. I'm scared for my partner. I'm scared for the country. I'm scared for environmental rights. Why are people feeling so shaky right now?
I think it's because it's all being ginned up by the media. That is my view on it. In reality, what's going to happen is another woman is going to be appointed. That's clear. And I believe that woman will be a centrist. Okay?
Why do you think that?
Because, well, I think I mentioned to you a few minutes ago when we were talking privately that, you know, I was listening to Trump this morning, and he let it slip that he's looking at a centrist. He's not looking at any ideologues. He's looking at a centrist. So, you know, he's talking about somebody that's like you and me. We're in the middle there, Sita.
Yeah.
You know, I'm maybe a little more to the right than you are, but we're still in the middle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ellen, what do you think about this? Because, I mean, the Supreme Court, that's the highest court of the land. And there are so many cases right now that are going to be decided. And one of them is the ACA,
right.
Obamacare.
Okay.
Right? So people are scared that, you know, we've had this law now where people with pre-existing conditions, you can keep your children on your insurance till 27. We want to expand Medicaid.
Okay.
You know, people are worried about that.
So a lot of the things that, because I've been looking up and kind of researching a little bit, we've been having this battle for a lot of years. And no president or anyone has, but I believe that if it is true that leak, the centrist idea, which just means that somebody's very moderate, for those of you who might not know what a centrist mm-hmm. is, somebody who has moderate political views, mm-hmm. I think that I think it'll be the more centrist that we can put in place, I think that we're maybe get away from the lobbyists a little bit. You know, cancer's a big...
Or the news, like he said, the news media that's ginning up everything.
Oh, yeah.
And cancer is a big moneymaker, and unfortunately, more women are suffering from cancer and pre-existing conditions than men are. I mean,
okay.
it's just, that's statistics.
I have the solution for the Affordable Care Act.
Yes.
Are you ready for this?
Yes.
Now, I'm a Republican. Now, get ready for this. Here it comes.
Yeah.
Here it comes.
I have one, too, so I'm going to add one.
First of all, forget about the Affordable Care Act. Forget about insurance. We have Medicaid in all 50 states of this union, okay? But we have limitations on who gets Medicaid.
So take the limitations off.
Take the limitations off.
Isn't that Medicare for all then?
No, that's not Medicare. Medicare is much different than Medicaid. Medicaid is our state programs.
Right.
Yeah, they're all different. They're all different because states are not all the same. I mean, you know, Wyoming is different than New York. I mean, come on. But we should increase the actual amount of money that you, the limit of the amount of money, the income that you can have, so people who can fit into that donut hole. That's why the Affordable Care Act was designed for the people who were not Medicaid and who could not get
health. I like your idea. So expand it for everyone.
Expand it in every state, Medicaid, you know, but you have to put a realistic wage amount. You know, I think the number should be $50,000. That's just me. This is 2020, and $50,000 doesn't go a long way.
Right, so you're zeroing in on the people in the gap.
Forget the gap. But that's what Affordable Care Act was designed for. Everybody else who has a real, who has a job, who has a career, we all get health insurance as a benefit of our employment. That should stay. That's a terrific system.
Yeah, because right now I think it's what the cutoff is, what, maybe $30,000 or something for Medicaid.
Increase it.
Yeah.
Increase it. And because it's actually, I think in the long run, it would save the country a lot of money. A lot of money because, you know, you'd be federally funding coming
well,
in.
Well, I can add to that. I'll say get the public option going.
Right.
Because I'm 55, and if I want to retire at 58, which I can, I should be able to buy into Medicare, like just a regular insurance. You know, just like we have Humana and Blue Cross Blue Shield and AvMed and everything else, I should be able to say, hey, I want to buy into Medicare. I'm not taking it for free. So I think that's a good idea to expand Medicaid. And increase the amount of money that people can be making.
It's
to
more realistic. It's more realistic. I mean, come on. You know.
Maybe we should team up and go to Washington, D.C.
That's not a bad idea. Not a bad idea.
No, he's right, because people get disqualified because of the amount of money they make.
Right.
Right?
It's stupid because, you know, I mean, $30,000 is like nothing. If you're trying to exist on $30,000 a year and you have a family, you're up against it really bad. And then all of a sudden you have some sort of severe health problem. I mean, you know. Let's say that you're making $40,000 a year. You're still up against it. You ought to be able. Everybody in this country ought to be able to have health care, and not have to worry about whether or not they're going to go broke, go bankrupt, to get it. To me, it's silly. So that's my solution. Expand Medicaid.
I think we're going to have to take this show on the road. So for our listeners who are tuning in, we're speaking with Stephen Coons.
Right, and I'm a Republican, by the way. Remember that.
And he's a Republican. I'm a Democrat. And Ellen, I know you switch a couple of times.
I switch back and forth all the time.
She's kind of like an independent. But we decided to do a show today about just talking about subjects and issues that are in the news media all the time. And the real people, their voices are being drowned out. So here's another thing that's in the news all the time. Police brutality and reforming the police and the word defund.
Yeah.
I believe that word, whoever came up with the word defund, they did an injustice to humanity. Talk about allocation of funds. Mm-hmm. So what do you think about that, Judge? I mean, all of a sudden we're seeing people on either side, the extreme left and the extreme right, talking about police brutality and disrespecting each other. My parents taught us that in and out of uniform, we should always show respect for each other, citizens and the people in uniform. But what do we do when we see a policeman shot or we see a citizen being, you know, killed at the hand of the police? I mean, how do we come together and say, hey, stop it, let's do this?
Okay, well, first of all, I reject the notion that we have systemic racism in the criminal justice system. What we do have is we have a system in place that applies to everybody, white or black. Doesn't matter who you are. We don't have two separate systems for people based on their race. We have a system that is, we have remedies for everybody. Everybody has a remedy. I mean, you know, if you're the victim of excessive force, you have a civil remedy, okay? And if that excessive force happens to be, you know, lethal, you know, that officer is.
He's going to be reprimanded.
Not reprimanded. He's in jeopardy of being prosecuted and arrested. And if he committed a crime, he should pay for it just like everybody else. I mean, so I reject that notion. But there's certain things about the criminal justice system that need to be improved. And one of the things that's in the news today are no-knock warrants. Now, when I was a judge, I signed 100 warrants, at least 100. And I never signed a no-knock warrant. Florida has a knock and announce statute here.
You're
in
talking
Florida.
About the Breonna Taylor case.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Because that's a disturbing situation. No knock warrants. Well, of course, the officers in the Breonna Taylor case, they say that they actually knocked and announced their authority. That's what they say. But they were there serving a no knock warrant. So I'm wondering why they're saying that. I oppose no-knock warrants, except for very limited circumstances. And that limited circumstance that's allowed under Florida and also federal law is what we call exigent circumstances. And that is if there is some compelling legal reason why there should not be a knock at the door. And one of the things they have going right now is, you know, they're worried about the evidence being secreted, the evidence being lost. I reject that notion. I think that I think human life is more important than evidence actually being flushed down a toilet. Sorry about that, but yeah, that's my position. I think that that exigent circumstance should be something related to human safety. If there is a victim inside, if there is a hostage inside, if someone's about to be killed, something like that, then I think they can come through the front door without letting everybody know they're coming.
Yeah. And of course, we're talking about excessive use of force. Like, mm-hmm. you know, we all saw what happened with George Floyd, and that, right. that became, you know, for months, everyone
oh, yeah.
has been talking about that.
Oh, yeah.
What do you think about banning chokeholds?
Well, I agree with that. There's no reason why you need to be choking people. And incidentally, Trump agrees with that, too. You know,
heard it on Viewpoint with Sita and France. See, we agree. No, yeah. We'll give him a few more. Yeah. So, and then, of course, here in Brevard, we all know we had this discussion about removing police officers from the schools or putting school resource officers. What did you think about that? Because people are saying that don't have the police in the school, instead have the school resource officers.
Oh, you definitely need a school resource officer. Absolutely. You know, they need to be careful about what they do, because crime occurs in our schools. There's crime going on in there, and there's some people in there that are dangerous, that are in our schools. So we need to make sure that we have them. Now, they shouldn't be arresting 6-year-olds
right.
or 7-year-olds, right. you know, taking them into custody. I mean, to me, that's incredibly dumb. But, you know, they shouldn't be doing things like that. But no, I'm absolutely in favor of school resource officers.
Yeah. And what about community policing? Like, I mean, I know, like, when I lived back home, when somebody was your police officer, he came from your village. So he pretty much knew the people who lived in that village. And if somebody did something wrong, he knew the family. And they can go and talk to the mom and dad or the people in the village or whatever and say, hey, what's going on with this person? And they try to reform that person.
Right.
So what's happening in the United States when you have people from police officers from a different race, culture, class comes into police a neighborhood, but they don't know that neighborhood? How can we, I mean, rectify that?
Well, I think that that's already happening. Most of the police officers that are in our major cities are police officers of color. They're Hispanics, they're blacks, absolutely.
Well, they represent the community.
Absolutely, they do.
And they
They're there. And they have more of an understanding of what people are up against, because, you know, that's part of their upbringing. So I would agree with that.
Yeah.
I think more police officers who happen to have that kind of a background should be involved.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And we all talk about the foundation for everything starts at home. We say whether it's loving parents or elders or the community.
I was much scareder of my friend's mom than I was of any police officer.
Well,
right?
we all.
Because, like,
yeah.
your neighbor, that I mean, back when we grew up, it was like your neighbor was the one I was more scared of.
Well, we all would. We eat, yeah. sleep, and breathe, right?
Yep. Right.
So people talk about the pipeline from high school to prison, and you probably saw a lot of cases like that.
Mm-hmm.
What should we, as citizens of the United States, people who live in Brevard in Florida, what should we be doing to prevent that from happening?
Well, the family is the key. There's so many kids out there that are growing up on the streets of our communities like weeds, and because they don't have a father figure in the family, they need to learn how to act like a man. Most of the problems are male. Most of these, you know, we don't have a lot of females that are, you know, we have some, of course, but most of them are male, and they need to know and understand what it means to be a man and how to act like a man and how to treat a woman properly and how to respect people's personal property and how to go to work and make money and come home and take care of your family. We need that.
Yeah.
To educate yourself, to get a good education, to improve yourself. We need
all
of that.
But that's how America used to be. That's how the whole world used to be.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden now we're seeing where young men are being locked up. I mean, even when you lock up somebody over child support, well, who's going to raise his family while he's behind bars?
Well, let me tell you how that works. when I did first appearances at the jail. Yes, all of a sudden I'd see some guy. He's there because he didn't pay his child support. But there's always a purge order. Purge order, which means that, listen, you can get out of jail. All you have to do is come up with some amount of money, right? And it's usually like $1,000, which is not a lot of money. And if they can't do it, they come back in the next day or so, and they just can't do it, then we let them go here in Brevard County. So they spend like maybe 2 or 3 days in jail before they're released.
So you do see that that will affect the family.
Oh, yes.
So you try to do what's right.
Absolutely, yes.
So if you had 3 things to say to our listeners today, Judge Koons, because you said you think that President Trump is going to win.
Yes.
And what are the 3 things you think? Why would you, that opinion is based on what?
There is a vast, vast silent majority out there, people who are sitting back quietly, watching all this happen, and they're going to go vote. And when they vote, they're going to want to preserve, protect, and defend our Constitution and the way of life here in the United States. That's what's going to happen. So you heard it here. I hope I'm right.
Yeah.
Okay,
what do you say to the people who are really worried about their health care? They're worried about getting the minimum wage increased. They're worried about environmental protections, women's rights. What do you say to them who are saying, well, if he wins, because personally, no matter who wins, I am going to wake up the next day and go to work.
Okay.
Nothing really changes in my life, but I do know of people who are worried about these things.
Healthcare, absolutely. You know, we need that. Everybody should be able to have, you know, healthcare that's, you know, competent healthcare. Women's rights, yes. Of course we should have that. Environmental, yes. I happen to disagree with Trump on environment. Okay, but, you know.
About the drilling?
Can you imagine if they started fracking here in Florida? I would go berserk. You know, I could, you know, we have an aquifer. I mean, we're sitting on top of limestone. I mean, it's incredible. That should never happen. But so I don't like what goes on by you know, doing all that, thousands of feet below us. I got sort of off the track there. You threw me off, but
the agreement with President Trump. You were talking about that you agree with some things, you don't agree with.
But on balance, I have to say that on balance, given the choice, to me it's a no-brainer. That's just me.
Yeah.
That's just me. You know, I'm definitely going to vote for Trump.
But the cool part is that we can have these discussions, right? And right. One of the things that I loved when you came in and we were talking, you were like, we can talk about anything.
Yeah.
Like, we can actually discuss and love each other.
We should bring
him
back after the election, too, to have a chat. Because
absolutely.
Here's the thing.
Yeah, right.
You know, I noticed on Facebook, like, someone had this disagreement about abortion. And I said, listen, the way to have less pregnancies terminated is through comprehensive sex education at appropriate ages, as well as academic and trade. Mm-hmm. You cut it. And then, of course, you see the hate coming out on both sides,
right.
People pro or against. I mean, how do you reach people like that to say, hey, listen, there are mechanisms in place, there are tools in place for you to learn what your reproductive rights are. But people don't want to take the time to listen to each other. I mean, how do you get people to listen?
Well, that's just a great question there. You know, we're assuming that people really want to listen. I think if they have to listen, it would be much, much more different. You know, like, I oppose public funding of abortions. I oppose that. I don't think taxpayers should be paying that. If we got just made that much of an inroad into that issue, I think that that would have an impact, whether it would be a negative against people.
You believe in personal responsibility.
Yes.
People taking responsibility
right.
for their lives and their families.
Don't worry about that.
But there are times when that, you know, people do make a mistake or someone, you know, something happens in a family, whatever, you know, we have to make provisions for that.
Well, that's a personal decision.
Yes.
Absolutely.
You're right.
Decision.
So tell us, give us your website if somebody wanted to check out your book.
My website, email me, cjkoons1@yahoo.com is the best way to get to me. And if you Google me, just Google Stephen R. Koons, my book will come up. You'll see that it's available on Amazon. And my second book, which is a whole lot better than my first book, although the first book got some good reviews, is coming out before Christmas. Excellent. And the working title right now is Little Black Box.
Excellent.
Okay.
One more time, that's CJ Koons, KOONS1@gmail.com.
At Yahoo.
Yahoo.
You look like an Energizer bunny. Where do you get your energy? Because people are saying people...
Well, I read the article, and he's a self-proclaimed insomniac.
People are saying that if you're in your 70s, you're not as alert and oriented. But you seem to be pretty alert and oriented, and you told us your age.
Yeah. I'm 72, everybody.
He's 72.
I'm 72 years old, and, you know... But don't get me started on that. I'll tell you how I stayed so young. But, you know, I never smoked cigarettes. I never abused alcohol or drugs. And I'm not going to say anything else.
I think it's because you found your purpose in life.
Yeah.
And anyone who wakes up every day and wants to constantly be doing something, you're active. Keep your mind, your body, and your spirit active. And I think you do a lot. You have also recognized preventative care of your body is very important.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
That's what it is.
Well, we'd like to thank the great people at Cooper Chiropractic who also take good care of people's bodies through acupuncture and through wellness. So you want to make sure you contact Cooper Chiropractic in Palm Bay. But we're going to take a quick break, Sita, and listen to a couple of other sponsors. And we're going to get right to our other call-in guests.
Can we just do one commercial, just the Cloud 9 ad, and then we go right to Asma? Yeah, because she's on the phone.
Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. The delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at cloud9furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. We just had a really nice segment with my friend, Mr. The Judge, Stephen Koons. He's Republican, I'm Democrat, and we just hashed out a few issues, and we kind of agree on most of them, really.
Yeah.
And now we've got our friend Basma Alawi. She's a co-founder and executive director of BasmaWeaveTales.org. She was born and raised in Baghdad, Iraq. Basma came to the U.S. with her husband as a refugee in 2010, leaving behind her career as an engineer with the Ministry of Oil, and we'll let her tell us about herself. So welcome to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, and thanks for taking the time to call in.
Thank you so much, Sita, for having me and for sharing stories of refugees. Thank you.
Well, you know what? I read your bio, and you know, your story is like so many of us who leave our families behind, and you know, it's a very emotional thing to leave your family behind and come to a new country and try to live and work and be part of this country. But in your heart, you do miss the people you left behind. So I understand your struggle and your plight to be living in the United States, but also thinking about those you left behind.
Yeah, it's actually... There are more than 70 million displaced people in our world today. So many of them didn't made it to their destination yet, and if not all. But definitely it's a struggle that's increasing every single day. And I am sure with the many climate change that's already happening and the wars that create more refugees around the world, I think the problem is becoming bigger and bigger every day, and more people need to understand what wars and hate speeches could create just like more displaced people and more need of understanding the stories of refugees worldwide now.
And foreign policy, we just touched on that in the first segment, that, you know, before people pass judgment on those who are waiting for asylum, they have to think about why people flee. And they do flee because of wars and, you know, conflicts, foreign policy, climate change, violence in their countries. People flee for so many reasons. I agree with you.
Yes, yes. I mean, foreign policy have affected my life a while ago when the war happened in Iraq and the invasion took place in 2003. Definitely, that's all because of leadership and it destroyed many Iraqis. And until today, we have over, I think, 100,000 Iraqis who worked and supported the American troops in Iraq, still struggling, and they have no place to go. So the U.S. have already gave them a promise to bring them to the United States because of their support. But again, I mean, we are failing many refugees and asylees and immigrants who we already promised that this will be their home.
Yeah. So, you know, when I went to your website, for some reason I couldn't post the one you gave me, but then I went to the one you gave me and I could see this beautiful family. Your mother is so beautiful. Tell us a little bit about your family and life in Iraq before you left after the war to come to the United States.
Yes, definitely. So I just want to make sure that people can check this story. It's on a shorthand on weavetales.org. Pretty much that story really we have published in the past 2 months, and it did bring a lot of trauma, reflection, and feelings. It's resonated a lot. And pretty much I was born and raised in Iraq, and my family, majority of them still in Iraq, and some have left or were forced to leave. And it was really a great community, a great family. My both parents are teachers, so really learning from home and school from them. We were privileged because they were amazing teachers and amazing parents, and I'm still learning from them a lot. Growing up, sadly, it was in Iraq, as many people may know, was raised and born in war. And when there's no war, we definitely take and appreciate every single moment that we live in peace. School was really a great place to learn from and make connection with. But definitely, I think in 2003, everything again collapsed and more dreams died and more people suffered. And until today, like in Iraq, people following the news since 2003, people never had their basic rights met, from power to energy to clean water to the oil that Iraq is so famous of. Like, people really not touching all these things. They are not living it. So there's, until today, people really fighting and protesting and asking just to meet their basic rights.
Right.
I
remember once I heard an Iraqi refugee who was speaking, and they were talking about Saddam Hussein and the war and the Iran-Iraq war, and then we had the invasion in 2003, and so many of us protested that war. I just want you to know, because we didn't believe in war. I believe in diplomacy and wars as a last resort. But the gentleman I was listening to, he was saying, well, Saddam Hussein was our bad guy. And even though the world saw him as bad, we had a really good life in that people did not have the issues that they have now under him. I mean, you were a child when you left, but what was the educational system and healthcare like under him?
Yeah, so I was actually, like, when 2003 and he was forced to leave and being president, I was, I think, around 17 or 18. So pretty much all my childhood and teen time, it was under his dictatorship. I think Okay, so it depends on who we are talking to. Definitely, there's a lot of different people have different opinion about Saddam Hussein in Iraq. I mean, simple things. We had two TV channels, and when
that wouldn't be good.
Yeah, but again, I mean, I can tell you that my brothers loved soccer, and when there is a really big game comes out, he will just shut it down, and he will have on both channels his speech. Like, that's like small examples of like when we talk about dictatorship. We are now in an election season, and I can tell you that if you don't elect Saddam Hussein or if you don't participate in the election in Iraq, bad things will happen to you and your family.
Yeah.
So
that was terrible. That's a true dictatorship. And
But definitely I am, if we compare after 2003 and the lies in Iraq after 2003 to before, people rather having Saddam Hussein. I can tell you that because after 2003, like, we were promised democracy. We were promised peace. We were promised safety. We were promised that we're going to live and practice all these amazing freedoms that we were promised to have. But none of that happened. I can tell you that in October of last year, a big revolution happened in Iraq. Many of the Iraqi protesters who were protesting peacefully, they were killed, and until now they are killed.
There's pros and cons to before and after, because I know, because people, I have Iranian friends who still talk mm-hmm. about the Shah of Iran, and people compare their life under him to right now under the Ayatollahs, you know. And so I that part of the world, it's really heartbreaking to see so many people, powerful people, who have used greed and power and control to control the masses, and the people are really still suffering in so many places. Now, we also saw that a lot of people got contracts to rebuild those countries. Were those contracts given to Iraqis, or were they given to other companies from the outside?
I think that's a really another big question, that if they are really given to the right people, we will see some new construction, buildings. But if you don't see anything, so where is all this money going? Like, seriously, like, who is leading all of this rebuild that is happening? Because it's not giving to the right people.
Is the people are still suffering.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And the problem is, like, I mean, I work with refugees in general and fight for all refugees to find home and be home. But if we are just, like, talking because of my story and because of Iraq, Iraq is one of places I feel like it's becoming not a for organization or even for other countries. It's like not a hot area. So even refugees coming from there are not priority. Even though a lot of the refugees from Iraq who are in Turkey, Lebanon, Jordan, and many other places, and some of them on the borders. They were suffering from ISIS. They suffered from the government. They suffered from many things, and now they are not considered as a really Iraq is not a hot area that we have as a priority. But I mean, this is Iraq is not the only. There are many other countries who went through a lot, and now because I think the problem too, there are more refugees, more displacement. So where we should focus, it's the question.
Right. And you're such an advocate too. Our listeners who are tuning in, we're talking with Basma Alawi, and she's the co-founder and executive director of Basma at weavetales.org. So to continue the conversation, you started being an advocate not just for Iraqis, but for people, refugees who are here in Florida, in Jacksonville and elsewhere, because you have lived the life of a refugee and you understand when people are promised something for helping a certain government or during a war or something, they should have priority.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. When I started, I think it's in the beginning, I was trying to understand what is the word advocacy mean? What it means that you can go outside your house and be free to hold government accountable? Because that for me was a foreign language. Outside your house, you don't speak politics. So when I came to the U.S. in 2010, that was something that I explored and I loved and I really embraced all the time. I became the Florida refugee organizer with We Are All America, which is, I want people to understand the work that the We Are All America campaign have been doing. I have been doing the organizing work in Florida, and just for people to understand what we do, We Are All America Florida Coalition is a multi-sector statewide table, which leads refugees, asylee advocacy efforts in Florida. The coalition spearhead local and state pro-refugees asylum policy initiatives and work towards empowering refugees and asylees to be civically engaged and become leaders in their communities. So our work have been grown really since 2 years ago when there was no one talking about refugees and organizing and advocating, because refugees was an easy topic. Refugees come vetted and they come with all their paperwork ready to work and contribute. But in the past 2 or 3 years, it became a really topic that people agree or don't agree, win election and lose election because of
stance on refugees. Yeah. And you also got an award in 2019, the One Jacks Humanitarian Award. And you were also nominated to be one of the Athena 40 women in the world who are leading changes. And I appreciate you so much. I mean, how does it feel to come from where you've come with all you've gone through and be able to give back so much and be recognized for it as well?
Yeah, I think it's pretty much, I really appreciate my community here in Jacksonville, Florida, the leaders, the mentors who really see in me and see in the work I do and in the mission I hold really an important things to really, really lead. I accept the awards or I accept all nomination because I want to lift the voice of a former refugee, women of color, hijabi, Muslim, Arab, whatever you want to, however you want to identify me with. But I want always to lift that up. I want to give refugees who are living now in refugee camps, who are living in really waiting for them to have a home soon. I want to give that hope that, hey, I am here, I am contributing, I am getting an award, I am getting all these amazing recognition because one day you will be more, even better than me. So that's exactly why I always hold that kind of a title, a former refugee before anything else.
Yeah, so you're because, giving voice to the voiceless. But when you're not advocating for refugees, what are you doing? I know you also work.
Yeah, so pretty much my full-time job is Florida Refugee Organizer with the Florida Immigrant Coalition. I do hold some kind of culture event and storytelling event. That's what really led me to co-found Weave Tales, which is in the end of last year, and pretty much to uplift the stories of our communities through storytelling, public speaking, different kind of culture events to bring communities together, to bring interfaith communities together to make sure that we are connected more than separated and divided. Our connection is even more. So I really like and enjoy working with the Weave Tales team and creating more spaces for people to feel safe, to share and meet people and learn about them. And especially now, I think with COVID, my work with the Florida Immigrant Coalition or even with Weave Tales have been grown because we don't need to be in a specific city or zip code. You can reach out to the world through the technology and the Zoom and the social media. So I feel like this year, even though it has stopped us from connecting with people in our local communities, but definitely we have built a bigger and wider community, and COVID didn't stop us.
Right. And, you know, when I think about you, you know, what I'm hearing is, you know, oftentimes we hear people say, rest in peace when someone passes away from the planet, right? But then I hear you and I'm like, why can't we just live in peace too, you know? So so tell us, where is home? I don't know, how much time do we have, Paul? We have 4 minutes. So when people say to you, Basma, where is home? What do you say to them? Because you sound to me as though you are torn at times.
Yeah, I mean, it's torn. Even you can be torn within even your own home and family. I always share with my community that you don't need really to be forced to leave your country to be a refugee. Sometimes you are forced to leave your family or local city or, I don't know, a faith from your own beliefs to an escape to go find a better you. For me, home is my community. I actually, what pushed me to do more and to be involved more, because I was trying to be part of a community. And Jacksonville have been home, but that's not mean I need to limit myself to an area. I do feel when I go places, I create my own home within relationship with people.
So you belong. You have a sense of belonging. But I also read where you also faced a lot of discrimination, and I think it's important for people to understand that you are here in the United States, born in Iraq and lived through the war, know about the Iran-Iraq war, the 2003 invasion, and you left your country because of foreign policy and wars, not because you wanted to, as a little child, leave. So when people discriminate against you, do you have all these pent-up emotions in you and you say, wait a minute, please don't discriminate against me? Because, what is the because that you think about?
Actually, because I want people, when they hear, listen, read, they want to read to learn, hear to learn, not to judge and give opinion. It's really important for people to understand the background of that person. The beautiful thing about the United States is the dual citizenship. I don't need to be just American. I can be Arab American. I can be Iraqi American. And we need to celebrate that. I always say, I don't need to be American in a way that I don't call my Iraqi identity, or the opposite. I want to contribute here and there, and not just to these two countries. And that's why I choose refugees, because as refugees, a person who are looking for a home, and it doesn't need to be within a space, a specific space, because they can be anywhere and count it as their home. So I just want to make sure, like, people don't judge.
Right. It's a blessing to be. Yeah. It's a blessing to be from both places and be able to contribute and give back to the United States. And
exactly.
And I think it's, I mean, we give back through our food, our culture, our religion, who we are as human beings. And I love what you're doing. It's so wonderful. I'd love to have you on again, because we need more people like you, Basma Alawi. Give us your website one more time so people can go on and contribute or volunteer or learn more about you and see what great things you're doing.
Yeah, so it's weareallusa.org/Florida. That's if they really want to engage in the organizing work, and weavetales.org if people are interested in stories and empowering the voices.
Do we have any more time? We have 20 seconds, and I hope to meet you one day in person, and I really would like to talk to you about some of the cultural sites in Iraq and some of the beautiful palaces. My husband is from Iran, and he always tells me how beautiful Iraq was and how beautiful the country was before the war.
Definitely.
And I'd like to share that with our listeners, so that people, when they hear about countries and wars and foreign policy, they can put it all together, because we're all human beings, and at the end of the day, we all want the same things. So give us the website one more time, and we're going to go off air.
Yes, it's people also can follow me, Basma Alawi, on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. It's just Basma Alawi. And I would love to connect and show them the way.
And thank you. And thank you so much for calling in. This has been another fantastic edition of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Please tune in next week on Monday, right here at 1510 WWBC.
The preceding program may not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management